It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running. It's Titanic Tuesday, Trump-tanic Tuesday, on the horn, the 14th day of May, 2019. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and just a piece of general advice. No, there's really no way to it. You don't have to worry about it because you're not in West Virginia. But if you were, and you were ever tempted to order pizza from Gino's Pizza at, say, a half an hour before closing, don't. Jesus. Apparently, I managed to somehow food poison the family last night with bad pizza. So if there are periodic breaks in the program, it's because it was absolutely necessary. You know, we've had naked radio here before. We've never had, though, that I can recall. I've never done radio with a bucket. There went dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Sorry. Just didn't want you to worry if I just disappeared all of a sudden or something. No, I called in. I like it. It's not good pizza to begin with. But if you get the crust thin and you just get cheese, you got a fighting chance. But they got problems with their phone lines down there. And I called and I said, I need a large cheese pizza with a thin, crisp crust. When I get down there, she hands it to me and she says, here's your pizza with an extra thick crust. This, I think, is where the problem arose. Yeah, because I don't think it got baked all the way through. And something, because it hammered me, it hammered Agnes, and it hammered Fur. Ugh. So, again, we'll get through 3 hours of radio. There is a slight possibility, however, that there will be intermittent interruptions. We apologize for the delay. Yeah. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. HeadOn.live and White Rose Society streams are both up and running. Hot and true, the Titanic vessel is well on its collision course with the big, beautiful iceberg. What do you mean? What do you mean, Sparky? Cheese pizza, yuck. What do you have on your pizza? Tofu? Yeah. Anyway, by the way, having mentioned Sparky, if you run over to headon.live and click on chat room, and you pick out a screen name and a password, well, you'll be immediately greeted by Anatole and Otto and Squeaky. Capably moderated by longtime inveterate indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who has folded space to become cheese pizza hating man cave. You'll also be moderated by pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy who recently got his internet back, Steve, from Georgistan. Everything. Well, that includes cheese. An everything pizza is just a cheese pizza with a lot more stuff. Oh, the philosophical arguments begin on this Trump-tanic Tuesday. Yeah. Every program begins, well, okay, that's true enough. Scott in San Diego, first horn broadcast with a bucket. You've inadvertently given Jim Baker an idea to raise, scam his next $1 million from gullible blue-haired old ladies. Oh, no. No, no, no. No. Just ack. But every program here begins with thanks. This is no different. We send out thanks to our subscribers. And I guess now, officially, the 14th day of the month is the loneliest subscriber day. I don't know. It may not be. We'll keep an eye on it. But thanks going out to Matt in San Francisco and Ralph's, our subscribers for the 14th of the month. They'd love to have some company. And thanks to John. And thanks to John for jumping in just now and getting us started. That means that our $493 fundraising goal is now down to $483. Thank you, John. Thank you very, very kindly. Hopefully John will have some company, and we won't have some sort of terrifying nightmare fundraising goal for prayer meeting Wednesday, and I'll have to bar the doors, and everybody will drink sweet tea, and then, you know, Brother Deacon Gerald of the Building and Grounds Committee will get all upset again, and it, right. Oh, where to begin? It's a day. And it's another one of those days where you start out thinking the program's going to be one thing, and then it turns into something altogether different. But we've been paying attention to the happenings and doings in the country's courts of law of late. So let's check in with the Honorable Justice Amit Mehta. Judge Amit Mehta is a United States District Court judge, and he happens to be the judge who heard Trump versus Committee on Oversight and Reform arguments in that case. And it was a bad day. Bad day for the lawyers there. Lawyers for the various and sundry Trump scams and Trump himself and the little Trump gits and Trump spawn went into court to plead that the House Committee on Oversight and Reform has no business seeing his tax returns, which they had, of course, subpoenaed. This is the, yeah. So Judge Mehta proceeded to question both sides, and it was, in the words of one report, a disaster for Trump's efforts to resist congressional subpoenas. Lead counsel for the Trump criminal operation was a well-paid pettifogger by the name of William Consovoy. Really? Consovoy? Sounds like a soup, a thin, flavorless soup you get in the south of France. Anyway, Consovoy tried to put forward this idea that Congress does not have the right that Congress has. And it's ridiculous. This, by the way, is the case in which a subpoena was issued to accountants, Mazars USA, that has done work for Trump and the various arguably criminal enterprises in which he and his nasty little crooked family have been involved. And the Mr. Consovoy Esquire has tried to create a new legal idea that Congress has to act in a legitimate legislative sphere. I mean, with anyone receiving the subpoena being able to define what constitutes legitimate and legislative. That's the important part of the Consovoy argument. The person whose documents are sought gets to define what constitutes legitimate and legislative. So the case is going to stay open as far as supplementing the record until the end of this week, at which point Judge Mehta has said he's going to be moving toward a ruling. There will be no further briefs, and he wants to just do the case. And there's not going to be some full trial that's going to last for years and years and years and years. Because that's what the criminal enterprise wanted, was to stretch this out, hopefully long enough to figure out a way to get Trump's vast amount of fat out of the fire. Of course, whatever happens, it goes to the D.C. Circuit then. And then up to the Supreme Court. Yeah. That Supreme Court. Right. Of course, there's another thing at work here. And we probably need to hit that story to make this make sense. I'll probably get grief from Robert in Australia, but I noticed here that gasoline has gone up to $2.84 a gallon. It's higher elsewhere in the United States and much higher in the rest of the world. But $2.84 a gallon, it's been climbing for as long as the saber rattling is going on. I mean, in other countries, do petrol or gas prices go up and down like a yo-yo on meth, and mostly up and very seldom down, based on some day trader getting a case of the fucking turtle squirts over saber rattling in the Middle East? Does that happen in the other, just all the time? Because that's our reality here in the United States. Headline from CNBC earlier today: oil prices jump as Saudi energy minister reports drone terrorism against pipeline infrastructure. Opening the question, of course, how one commits terrorism against an inanimate object, but you know, never mind. We'll take that as read. The creep in question is a member of the royal, serene, noble, high, gracious bunch of head-lopping barbarian shithead thugs of the royal house of Ibn Saud, namely Saudi energy minister Khalid al-Fayy, who said that while oil production was not interrupted, that somebody flew some drones that attacked a pair of oil pumping stations near Riyadh that served the Saudi East-West pipeline. They were drone bombers. Sure they were, oil minister. Sure they were. I guess maybe because the two empty tankers, one of which was bound for the United States, story, you really didn't get that leggy. At this rate, it will not be long, as our buddy Bob pointed out earlier in the day. At this point, it will not be long until the Saudis are reporting that drones, terrorist drones, are carrying precious little Saudi babies out of incubator windows and dropping them on the hot, dusty streets below. Because the truth ain't in them. And they are, for the most part, a gang of goddamn barbarian liars. I'm sure I won't live to see it. It's too far in the future. But if we can ever right the ship of state, if we can ever come to our senses and realize that we're just going to have to do the necessary things without the consent of one-third of this country who, you know, eats cocktail weenies with their toenail clippings. Wow, yeah, dinner in the Eastern time zone's really taking a licking today. Someday, and this is just a fantasy, maybe I should write it as a script or something and offer it to somebody in Hollywood. But someday, it would be nice to have a president who could look at those barbarian, bloodthirsty, misogynistic thugs in Saudi Arabia and say, hey, you can cut off every damn drop of oil that comes to the United States because we're absolutely filthy with wind and solar energy. Our cars are electric, and we don't need your shit anymore. So why don't y'all just fuck right off into the desert and go fuck a goat or something, you barbarian shitbirds? Because that would be cool. And then take George Washington's words in his farewell address to heart and spend our days avoiding foreign entanglements, giving not a tinker's damn about the filthy hydrocarbon-soaked cash of a bunch of jumped-up barbarians who have barely figured out how to behave. They murder people in other countries. They haven't figured out how to behave as members of a community of nations. They haven't figured that out. And, you know, whoever Mohammed bin Salman's nasty little fucking spawn are, tell them to fuck right off. It is a sort of a dream of freedom. And how sad that we here have to dream of being free of that of that gang of hateful purveyors of planetary death. Yeah, the what's his name? Minister Al-Fali. Wait. Flea. Minister Flea. That Flea, you see, Al-Fali, is me. He, Al-Fali. Trying to sound his stentorian best, he said, "This act of terrorism and sabotage, in addition to recent acts in the Arabian Gulf, do not only target the kingdom, but also the security of world oil supplies and the global economy. Where's Dick Cheney when I need him to spread some really thick goddamn lies all around the planet? Where's Colin Powell to point at some pictures when we need him? Oh, wait a minute, it's the Trump administration. We don't even need any of that. The maggots will believe anything. Good for us." Apparently, according to the CNBC story, a Yemeni Houthi-run TV channel announced today, this morning, that it had launched drone attacks on several Saudi installations. Damn it! There they go, spoiling Minister Flea's fun. Because he really wanted people to think it was Iran. And you know what? A lot of people who desperately want a war with Iran may go ahead and say that anyway, because, like I said, the truth ain't in them. Oh, well. Oh, but speaking of oil companies, this is fascinating. Did you know that ExxonMobil had a magic machine by which they could peer into the future? Yeah, really. Back all the way back to 1982, ExxonMobil predicted something that happened on May the 3rd, 2019. Back in 1982, in an internal document from Exxon Research and Engineering Company, they predicted that by 2020, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere would be somewhere between 400 and 420 parts per million. They made this observation in something called their 21st century study high growth scenario. Because you see, nobody on planet Earth has known better exactly what burning all these fossil fuels was going to do to the planet than the people who were producing the fossil fuels for all the burning. This is on a par with finding the documents that prove that the tobacco companies knew way back that smoking was toxic and carcinogenic. No, ExxonMobil didn't have a magic window into time or anything like that. They just had something called science, which they use and occasionally suppress, like in this here document. If we had a functioning judiciary and we took the idea of punitive damages seriously, documents like this would be sufficient to warrant a punitive damages award in which, instead of writing the number one and just writing zeros until their wrists got all tired, a jury would just simply write on the verdict form every goddamn penny they fucking have. And put ExxonMobil to death. Because, of course, climate change claims lives in its own right. But yeah, by 2020, 400 to 420 parts per million. Well, what happened on May the 3rd at the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii was the observation of humanity's first day ever with more than 415 parts per million CO2 in the air. As of May the 12th, levels remain steady at 415 parts per million. Now, this story is made especially infuriating when you consider the God only knows how many dollars that have poured out of, say, ExxonMobil into the American Petroleum Institute, whose sole purpose on planet Earth is to lie to the inhabitants of said planet and tell them that there is no such thing as global climate change of an anthropomorphic nature that is fueled by the combustion of hydrocarbons. And, of course, right there, hand in glove with them, are the various and sundry other oil companies and, say, you know, petrostates, like our partners in peace from Saudi Arabia, who are desperately trying to gin themselves up a war. See, this bullshit that's being pushed out there by oil minister Flea has a couple of prongs. On the one hand, if he could gin it up so that we could get our war on against Iran, that would give Donald J. Trump a little itsy-bitsy stiffy. Right. On the other hand, given the fact that there is a move on in Congress to defund our participation with Saudi Arabia in their filthy little war against the Yemenis, this would bolster, oh, no, you cannot do that. Why, they're attacking pipelines with drones. Yeah. So, you know, I really can't come up with enough nasty things to hope happens to Oil Minister Flea or his boss MBS. I mean, I try. Ebola. Ebola would be cool. If we could keep it isolated just to the royal house of Ibn Saud. Or maybe just a really good case of the why does it hurt when I pees. Or her pees. Or all of the above. Gonoherpesyphilades. Because they're just horrible, terrible, really bad excuses for an attempt at membership in the community known as humanity. Fucking jumped up barbarians. On the other hand, there was a meeting in Perth, Australia. Perth managed to find its way into the conversation yesterday evening. Recently, at an annual general meeting, a fellow by the name of Simon Thompson, who is the chairman of Rio Tinto, a huge, vicious mining conglomerate. Well, Simon Thompson said something no one would ever probably have expected him to say. I mean, Simon dresses well, and he knows which fork to use with the shrimp and which one to use with the oyster. He knows never to pair white wine with human flesh. But he responded to something that the incredibly stupid Prime Minister of Australia recently said. Not recently, but Tony Abbott, who was Prime Minister of Australia, back in 2014 said, coal is good for humanity. Coal is good for prosperity. Coal is an essential part of our economic future here in Australia and right around the world. Again, that was 2014. Well, this prompted a remark because the shareholders of Rio Tinto are throwing a bit of a fit about climate change and Rio Tinto's place in it. And so, speaking at the annual general meeting, in response to some remarks by a fellow by the name of Julian Vincent, who's executive director of the environmental finance group Market Forces, who had criticized Rio Tinto relative to the combustion of coal. Well, Simon Thompson did something surprising. He said, coal is not essential to human progress. Let's hear that again. Coal is not essential to human progress. In the case of coal, there are viable alternative sources of energy that do not produce greenhouse gases. So we would argue that coal is not essential to human progress. Exciting, huh? Well, he wasn't done. In the case of steel, there are no obvious substitutes in a whole range of applications. It is our judgment that steel is essential to human progress. If you take an advanced economy like Australia, there's probably about 10 to 12 tons of steel installed around us per capita in buildings, in bridges, in transportation, in machines of all kinds. If you take a developing nation like India, it's only one ton. So unless we're going to freeze the development of the world in its current state, it is inevitable that
people are going to have to produce primary steel in order to develop.
Which is good for Rio Tinto because they're mainly an iron ore mining firm. They don't care who or what they ruin or how many indigenous groups they run over or push to extinction as long as they get their iron ore. But he acknowledged that the steel problem isn't in the steel itself. It's in what you have to add to iron ore to turn it into steel. He continued and said, "It is the coking coal that is added in the blast furnaces that results in the greenhouse gas emissions during the production of steel. And there are alternatives, technically feasible alternatives, to using coking coal in the steel manufacturing process."
Process.
Which is going to be bad news for the coal companies here in Appalachia, because while nobody really wants thermal coal anymore, a lot of the stuff that's being taken out of the mountains that are blasted and the people who are poisoned by mountaintop removal blasting operations, that's what's called metallurgical coal. And metallurgical coal is coked, that is, it is combusted in a near anaerobic environment so as to remove impurities so that you've got almost pure carbon when you chuck it into the blast furnace with the iron ore. But apparently, Mr. Simon knows something about the making of steel and says you can do it without using coked coal. Because even an outfit like Rio Tinto, and remember, all these corporations are fixated on one thing and one thing only, profit. You must make a profit. Lots and lots of profits. Otherwise, I have really no purpose in my otherwise banal and sad and meaningless existence. All I know how to do is think about money, you see, and think about steel, and how steel makes more money, and how if we make more money, we can put more money into our share prices, which in turn drives our share prices up and makes more money. Grubbing money, really, is all we have. Oh, yes, I have a fine, fine house in the country and a river of beer over my grandmother's paisley shawl. But if you took me away from the business of grubbing at money, I would be a hollow shell, a husk of myself, you see, and would probably have to go into my study, my exquisite study with its lovely, lovely hardwood polished paneled walls, and have a slug of some 300-year-old scotch and blow out my goddamn brains, because otherwise my life is fucking meaningless.
Right.
Because, you see, back home in Merry Oldie, there was a bit of an announcement recently. Britain went an entire week. And you know, anything that begins with so-and-so went an entire week means that you're probably dealing with an addiction circumstance or a 12-step circumstance or a one-day-at-a-time circumstance. Because if you have to be proud of, you know, hey, I've gone a whole week without a drink, or I've gone a whole week without meth, or I've gone a whole week without crack, or I've gone a whole week without fill in the blank. I've gone a whole week without running heroin up my arm. Well, in the case of Merry Oldie, Britain went a whole week without burning so much as a single lump of coal to generate electricity. And that is the first time that that has happened since the onset of the Industrial Revolution. which began in Mary Oldie, somewhere between 1760 and 1820 or 1840. So, to be charitable, let's say 1840. Okay, shit, I got a cipher. So, 1840 is 100 years, 160 years. That's 179 years. That is a long bender. That is a bad binge. I think about, well, there's a line from Jimmy Buffett's song, A Pirate Looks at 40, where he says, I have been drunk now for over 2 weeks. I passed out and I rallied and I sprung a few leaks. But I got to stop wishing. I got to go fishing. I'm down to rock bottom again. Well, welcome to rock bottom, planet Earth. But welcome to hopefulness. But it's not quite dance in the streets hopefulness, because rather than burning all of that filthy coal, Britain replaced it with burning filthy natural gas. The largest contributor to electricity generation in Britain during that week was, in fact, natural gas. But wind turbines were making their contribution. And even in the latitudes where sits the Sceptred Isle, solar panels were making their contributions. And so there's it ain't a lot of hope. As Bill Nye pointed out, the planet's on fucking fire, motherfuckers. But still, there's a lot of something in there. When the head of a mining consortium is saying, we make it. We really do, actually. We make rather a shit ton of steel. Well, we don't make the steel. We mine the ore and we sell it to people who make the steel. But it's our understanding, scientifically, that one need not burn coked coal to make some lovely, lovely batches of steel. Yes. Is it tea time yet? Oh, good. Yeah, what, Todd?
Todd in South Carolina. Damn, Bob, slow down.
I thought I was going at a perfectly appropriate pace for a Trump-tanic Tuesday, but perhaps not.
Robert in Australia says, Tony Abbott was two prime ministers ago. I'm sorry, yeah, but I was especially unfond of him, Robert, so you'll understand. Okay, good. You know, Robert adds, he was and is a fucking idiot, which puts him on a par with our current prime minister, what's his name? I can see he's earned a place in your heart, Robert, who rolled into Parliament with a big lump of coal because it's Australia's future. Hopefully he'll be gone by Saturday midnight. By the way, the election TV and radio blackout starts tonight at midnight. No election news coverage allowed on TV and radio. Do you do that in the U.S.?
that's a good one. That's a good one, Robert. No, hell no. Our election processes, Robert, are exercises in the most virulent, toxic forms of capitalism. An election news blackout? Really? An election advertising blackout? Are you kidding me? How would the multimillionaire for-profit media rake in all of that campaign welfare from us chumps out here who donate a dollar to this candidate, or can you give $3 to that candidate, or we need $27 to meet our quarterly goal for the filing deadline, or send me five or I won't be in the debates. Good God, man, be real.
Still, going to Australia to say that, especially in light of what Robert described, you know, a prime minister who did with a lump of coal what that idiot senator from Oklahoma did with a snowball. Well, look, I gotta find some happy somewhere along the way. Yeah. What's that? Steve on the West Coast, formerly of China. Greasy spoon epitaph, the oily futurist. Here's a future, the carbon epic. Oil well. Love the topic. Thanks, Steve. Thanks. Steve, a founding member of the Fraternity of Steves. Now, I'm not entirely sure how we got from... if ExxonMobil predicted 415 to 420 parts per million by 2020, and we're there a year ahead of time, you got to wonder whatever other documents they've got tucked away, you know, in the places where they really hope we won't find them. You know, the Soylent Green memo. But by the way, there's been a really, take out the really, Bob, there's been a nasty amount of flooding all the way from Canada down into the upper Midwest. And it's apparently also found its way to Texas. Rain and flash flooding. One of the worst places, apparently, to ever build a megalopolis was the area we know as Houston, Texas. And so, a whole bunch of Houston and other Texas cities in that general geographical area have been underwater this week. And it was, I guess, appropriate that came as the United States closed the books on the single wettest 12 months in the entire history of the nation. That single wettest 12 months of the history of the entire history of the nation, having seen a whole bunch of the Midwest go underwater. Coming up, probably more. And guess what? While on the one hand, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has said that we're at the lowest level for drought in North America in decades, it's basically because it's hard to claim that something has a drought on it when it's underwater. You know what else doesn't have drought? The entire Atlantic Ocean, the Gulf of Mexico, the Pacific Ocean, the Indian Ocean, the Arctic Ocean. No drought. And guess what? Scientists who are focused on climate change say that this broader trend is directly as a result of, global warming. Yeah. Not that you'd know that if you were any kind of a MAGA or Republican or anything like that. It's been a tough week or so for hydrocarbons. Cloud Peak Energy, headquartered in Wyoming, done went and filed for bankruptcy protection back on Friday. And just a reminder, because they're a non-union outfit, Cloud Peak Energy is now going to screw their employees to the wall. Mm-hmm. Because they're not having much in the way of luck. In expanding their export market. Trying to put as brave a face on it as possible, Cloud Peak President and CEO Cullen Marshall said,
while we undertake this process, Cloud Peak Energy remains a reliable source of high-quality coal for customers.
They've got a couple of mines.
They're huge. Huge.
They got two mines in the Powder River Basin of Wyoming and one in Montana. And so they're going to screw their workers, pay some retention bonuses to their executives, and keep on trying to do business. Cloud Peak Energy adds their name to Alpha Natural Resources, Peabody Energy, Arch Coal, Mission Coal, and Westmoreland Coal, as all having gone bankrupt since 2015. That whole bringing back coal thing that Julius Geiser talked about so much, it looks like that's just another one of those lies that he told. He's even tried to bail out the coal industry with some corporate socialism. So far, no such luck. The Interior Department has even dummied up endangered species protections, trying to make life simpler for the coal industry. Not a good time to be working. And see, this is the funny thing. All those years that all of those dumb goddamn coal miners spent hollering about the Obama war on coal. Obama's nowhere to be found. There was more coal mined under Obama's first term than in either of George W. Bush's previous two. But Barack Obama's not around anymore. No, they've got the president they dreamed of. A real friend of coal who's nice and white. And they're still getting fucked. Oh, too bad, assholes. Maybe if you'd have paid attention, you'd have had a fighting chance. But you didn't, so, oops. These things happen. So, just a whole bunch of stuff to jump into, and we haven't even scratched the surface of the iceberg. No. Oh, and this from Bloomberg, and I'd be curious with our... with the California contingent of our Horn Family Community Congregation as to whether you're hearing about this, what kind of plans you're making, how are you dealing with it, do you think it's real? After the Paradise Fire, which many thought to have been a product of winds snapping power lines and power lines starting fires. Well, Pacific Gas and Electric has announced plans to reduce power, cut power, on windy days to keep from setting the state on fire again. PG&E, by the way, is also a bankrupt. They're the ones who said that a transmission line that snapped in windy weather started the campfire. I'm sorry, not the Paradise Fire, the campfire. California Governor Gavin Newsom said, I'm worried. We're all worried about it for the elderly. We're worried about it because we could see people's power shut off, not for a day or two, but potentially a week. And so with wildfire season starting around June and running through December, and with climate change probably meaning that it will eventually, in the not-too-distant future, it'd just be a year-round thing. Well, for instance, there in Calistoga, which I learned about, a town which I learned about as a teenager by listening to Shel Silverstein do the a recitation called The Smoke Off, where lived the Calistoga kid, a beatnik from the past. He'd been rolling dope since time began, and he took a cultured token. He said, I can roll them faster than any chick can smoke. Well, in Calistoga, PG&E says it'll cut service quite possibly as many as 15 times during the coming fire season. That, according to the mayor of Calistoga, briefed by PG&E. And PG&E says they're going to set up what are called resiliency centers. That's not a little bit Orwellian. They'll bring in backup generators to run essential services for people whose lives will be put at risk by these outages. On the other hand, Mayor Canning of Calistoga said they're trying to figure out a way to put in microgrids of solar panels and batteries that would let the community keep working when the plug gets pulled. Yeah, Sparky says, I heard about the PG&E plan weeks ago. Now, this thing hit the wires on May the 12th, so that's 2 days ago. I guess some people will get some of those Tesla batteries or the other batteries that are available, but you know, they're not good for a week. But this is, you know, this is reality, without a doubt. Stand by, please. Welcome to the future. And then there's, this is all just Trump-tanic stuff. And it covers a broad range of topics. apparently the spine has run right out of the Senate Intelligence Committee run by Richard Burr of North Carolina. They have apparently, according to published reports, struck a deal with Don Jr. A deal. Not exactly clear why it is that the Senate Intelligence Committee needed to strike a deal with Don Jr. They served him with a subpoena, and he flaunted it, and let the chips fall where they may. But no, tremendous amounts of pressure have been applied, and this is kind of weird to say. Tremendous amounts of pressure have been applied to not only Richard Burr of North Carolina, but to chinless Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, who had given his blessing to Burr's subpoena of Too Stupid to Be Indicted. Among other things, Lindsey Graham publicly urged Don Jr. to simply ignore the subpoena. Oh, really? A sitting United States senator advised a private citizen to ignore a lawfully and duly issued and served subpoena. So now, and I'm sure the Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee were left out in the cold on this. Now, the deal that has been struck will say that Don Jr. only has to show up for about 2 to 4 hours in the middle of June if he feels like it. No word yet on whether he will be comforted by Lindsey Graham holding his penis in his mouth while he testifies. You see, with 2 to 4 hours, there's barely enough time to get all the questions in from all the members of the committee. And as long as he stonewalls and shrieks and screams and howls and says, Bruga, Bruga, then no meaningful information will come forward. Because the reason for all of this is because we now know that, well, Don Jr. probably lied his nasty little ass off when he did show up and speak to the committee. And that's not the only person the heat's on for. Oh, no. For his lawyers, too. The New York Times reporting that based on the things that Michael Cohen testified to, there are reasons to believe that Trump lawyers were actively engaged in crafting the lies that were told about the Trump Tower Moscow project. The lawyers who have been subpoenaed or called to testify include Jay Sekulow, a Christian, Alan Fuderfoss, who is the lawyer for Don Jr., number one wartime consigliere for the Trump Organization, Alan Garten, and Abby Lowell, who is the lawyer for Precious Ivanka. For some reason or another, nobody wanted to talk to Rudy Giuliani. Because everybody knows he's a liar. Yeah. Writing to the lawyers, House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff said, among other things, it appears your clients may have reviewed, shaped, and edited the false statement that Cohen submitted to the committee, including causing the omission of material facts. In addition, certain of your clients may have engaged in discussions about potential pardons in an effort to deter one or more witnesses from cooperating with authorized investigations. Lawyers for the lawyers responded with a resounding harumph. Patrick Strawbridge, who is the pettifogger representing Seculo, said, instead of addressing important intelligence needs, the House Intelligence Committee appears to seek a truly needless dispute, this one with private attorneys, though it forced them to violate privileges and ethical rules. No, sorry. Wrong there, fucking Clarence Darrow. Because there is not a legal code for lawyers in the entire United States that affords attorney-client privilege to a lawyer who is aware that his client is engaged in something criminal or dishonest and knows it to be fact. Let's say you've got the defendant in the case of People versus Who Killed Cock Robin. And your client comes in and goes, I killed Cock Robin. Well, that lawyer can't then go into court and pretend that he doesn't know that his client committed to killing. And that's the case here. These lawyers are saying, attorney-client privileges prevent our clients. No, they don't. Not if they were actively engaged in an illegal act, and they knew, and their counsel knows that they were. Mm-mm. Round and round we go. This sort of harkens back to something I was talking about on More In Monday. You might recall I pointed out that the anti-abortion industry is exactly that. An industry. And it's got a lot of money, and as I noted last night, it is self-replenishing from the people who have had their minds twisted by religion and think that somehow or another there's a moral choice involved when a woman decides whether to continue a pregnancy. And that somehow or another, they themselves are involved in that moral choice. Well, enter Georgia State Insurance and Fire Safety Commissioner Jim Beck. He's been indicted by a grand jury on charges of wire fraud, mail fraud, and money laundering. That's just the beginning. And some of it has to do with the fact that he was allegedly involved with the Christian Coalition of Georgia in one of their schemes, whatever. He made millions of dollars out of the scam and funneled that into his race to be insurance and fire safety commissioner. Used some more of the money to pay off his taxes and to pay what are called personal expenses. The indictment says that Jim Beck
ran money from the Georgia Underwriting Association through a separate shell company to the Georgia Christian Coalition. Funny, last I checked, Christians weren't supposed to be involved in such sleazy, skeevy, dodgy, filthy business as money grubbing. Almost enough to make you wonder if they're really Christians. Nah, there's no wondering involved. They're not. Not by a long damn shot. And by the way, someone's running for president. No, I'm not talking about the latest guy to enter the field of thousands over on the Democratic side. Let's just say the white horse is feeling his oats. They had another vote in the Senate today on yet another shitty, sleazy, unqualified Trump nominee for a lifetime position on the federal bench. This asshole's name is Michael Truncale. Truncale, if you want to look him up. He was going to... The idea was for him to sit on the bench in the Eastern District of Texas. It was back in 2011, long about the same time that Donald J. Trump was ginning up his latest dodge, the birther conspiracy, alleging that that one in our White House wasn't really an American. When Michael Truncale referred to Barack Obama as an un-American imposter. Kind of hard to imagine anybody, before this country went completely to shit, that would have been enough to keep a guy from even being considered to be a federal judge. But not in Trump-merica. In fact, that's a job recommendation. It meant that he was on the same page as the boss. Well, it'll come as no surprise that Michael Truncale was confirmed today by a vote of 49-46. Let's see, that means there were 5 senators not voting. Must have meant they were not present. 49-46. Now, even though he referred to Barack Obama as an un-American imposter, even while Barack Obama was the sitting president of the United States, when he had his confirmation hearing, he said, I don't endorse the birther theories. Except that he really, actually, no kidding, said those things. Enter Bishop Willard Romney. All the Democrats voted against Truncale, and Bishop Willard broke ranks. Bishop Willard voted no on Truncale's nomination, confirmation. He knew it wouldn't make any difference. He was going to be confirmed anyway. But the man with the binder full of women, who thinks that 47% of the American people are just takers, said, speaking to Politico, he made particularly disparaging comments about President Obama, and as the Republican nominee for president, you remember, I was the Republican nominee for president once,
I just couldn't subscribe to that in a federal judge. This was not a matter of qualifications or politics. This was something specifically to that issue as a former nominee of our party. I was a former nominee of the Republican Party to be president. Except for the losing part, I did a pretty good job of it. I added a bunch of stuff in there, but yeah, he did that. So he got a freebie. He got to get a dig in, sort of tangentially, at Trump. And at the same time, he pays no price for it, and his vote had no impact on the outcome. But the minute I saw this story over at Politico, I couldn't help thinking, yeah, the white horse is feeling his oats. Because it goes back to some bizarre Mormon prophecy that says, when the Constitution is hanging by a thread, which it is, a white horse will go to Washington and save the Republic. And the white horse in the white horse prophecy within the Mormon community is some Mormon who's going to return America to its constitutional greatness and give us all bicycles to ride in France. I don't know. While we're protecting Paris from the Viet Cong, like Bishop Willard did. I guess I'm being a little bit truculent. But when you think about all the nasty shit that Willard Romney wanted to do to our country, I mean, he had such horrible judgment, he selected Wisconsin's answer to Eddie Munster to be his running mate, who then got his ass handed to him by Joe Biden in the one debate there. He's positioning himself as a real and true good, upstanding American who doesn't agree with Donald Trump and what he's done to the civility of our country. You remember the civility of our country back when Republicans fucked us without calling us names? Yes. Those great days of civility when, well, they did the same shit Trump is doing now and wants to do, but they did it without flinging boogers at the same time and wearing stupid red hats that mean the same thing that a burning cross does. Yeah, that Republican Party. Well, not in Mormon circles, it's not, Steve. Steve from New York says, no. The white horse is Shadowfax, and the rider is Gandalf. Oh, you need to bone up on your loopy Mormon prophecy. Sorry. Subject line fizzle. Steve on the West Coast says, "Here's a California comment. I think you mean the rolling thunder economy of the late '80s into and beyond the Clinton era." When we had a super surplus flush of extra and no deficit cluttering up the place, while all that good infrastructure never got on the board or built, but did get talked and talked and talked about forever. You know, the castle ruin infrastructure we're watching crack and melt and explode and sputter and kindle fires right now. People would say to me, "Oh, everything's great. Just look at the tech sector and all that magic Apple stuff going on up the Bay Area." So being magical and not fiscal, it all got hoarded away. In wine and wine tasting and mousy cheese nibbling and more magical thinking or shitty real estate deals, only to fall flat dead with its tongue hanging out. A lot of us just wanted a decent job to build a road or to fix a bridge or to spend a paycheck. Yeah, the good old days. Steve in New York regarding Lindsey Graham says, "I'm now firmly convinced Trump has pictures of Lindsey with a man in his mouth. By the way, this latest shows that the whole subpoena business was nothing more than a ruse. The GOP can say they subpoenaed him. Trump can complain about the subpoena, and everyone can cite 30 hours otherwise and see how nice son of the orange orangutan was to voluntarily submit to 4 more hours. Yeah, I mean, I said this was all a dodge when it started. Meanwhile, a fundraising email forwarded along from Darlene in Connecticut. I'm suing President Trump. Please read. Darlene says, I'm assuming this has to do with the emoluments clause. I wanted to reach out to share the news of a tremendous victory in our ongoing lawsuit against President Trump. A U.S. District Court supported a common-sense reading of the Constitution and ruled that our lawsuit against President Trump can move forward. Here's why I believe this is important. The president still holds an ownership stake in the Trump Organization, and the Trump Organization continues to accept payments from foreign governments for hotel rooms and events. No one is above the law. It's long past time to hold President Trump responsible for his unlawful business dealings, and we just took one huge step toward accountability. And then the necessary please donate $5 or more language. Things are getting a little snug, no doubt about it. What's that, Brother Deacon Asa? Say what you will about Bishop Trees are the right height Romney. At least he didn't pick Tim Milquetoast Kaine as his running mate. Well, there is that. The wrong-footedness. Regarding my having mentioned the American Petroleum Institute, Scott in San Diego says, a moment, please, to look into the future with a page torn from the past. Two can play this peering into the crystal crockpot future viewing game, ExxonMobil. You may recall that one aspect of the multiple billion-dollar settlement of a group of state attorneys general reached in the late 1990s with Big Tobacco was that the lying tobacco companies were required to dismantle their science propaganda branch, the Tobacco Institute. Maybe, some grand and glorious day, we will see the petroleum industry called to account and be required to pay a shit pot of cash for all the damage their lies have done for decades, and their petroleum institute will go the way of the tobacco institute. I think that would be fine, and that was what I was talking about with regard to punitive damages. But, and it goes back to ExxonMobil, in regard to the Exxon Valdez disaster, the Supreme Court said it's not nice to impose punitive damages on a company that actually serve the purpose of being punitive, that is, punishing bad behavior. I mean, you can't punish them to death or anything, no matter how awful they behave. And that's what you get when a Republican runs the Supreme Court and has a tasty little majority to work with, because that happened. Yeah. By the way, a note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Every damn day, another installment. Saw a video clip today with Dennis Prager and Candace Owens, and I sat there listening while Prager and Owens explained that black people were the most racist people in America. Ms. Owens said that her fiancé was white. Prager asked if the people that viewed that negatively were black, and Candace said, yes, they were, to which Prager said that white people didn't care if white people and black people married. After you just related the story of the Georgia City Councilman that went off on an anti-miscegenation tirade. I'm from Virginia, says Ron. I was in my mid-teens when Loving versus Virginia decision struck down anti-miscegenation laws nationwide. Does Dennis Prager believe these laws were put in place by black people? I related that story to say that there is a subset of young black conservatives that believe some of the most outrageous conservative bullshit imaginable. And that's a great word for it. I've linked to an article where several young black conservatives express their delusional beliefs. My fear is if these young black conservatives grow as a group and they form a coalition with the rest of the Republican Party, we're going to be deep in deep electoral shit. Delusion, denial, or a grift, I don't know either way. Either way, it is bad juju. You can find it at nymag.com. Black conservatives delusional. We are getting near to the halfway point of the program. We started the program with a $493 fundraising goal. John kindly reduced that to $483.
And that is where we stand, trying to keep up with the bill paying here. $483. And hopefully that will ameliorate somewhere along the way, even if we just knock down a day's worth. If we could knock down 283, that would be everything from yesterday and the remainder of last week, because we are more than a couple of days behind. So that's what I'm waiting for. That's what I'm hoping will happen, because I hate sweating whether or not this program's going to remain on the air. And that's where we are. So I tell you what, stress line's open. We've already got a caller on the Skype line. If you want to dial in, 844-843-4676. I got another story that begs to be told. It comes out of the hell of Middle Tennessee, and it's all kinds of disgusting. And I want to make sure that we get to that this evening. So don't let me not, okay? Don't let me get caught up and forget that. But at any rate, it being a Trump-tanic Tuesday, that means we've got the Green News Report. So let's check in with Brad and Desi.
It's Tuesday, May 14, 2019.
There will be some sacrifice on the part of Americans, I grant you that.
Trump's escalating trade war hits U.S. natural gas industry.
The Arctic is at the forefront of opportunity and abundance.
Administration ICE's Arctic Council declaration over climate change wording.
Houston on high alert, facing a flooding deja vu from a storm system stretching down the entire Gulf Coast.
Houston floods again as the U.S. just saw its wettest year on record. Plus,
I am declaring that there is a climate emergency and Scotland will live up to our responsibility to tackle it.
UK and Scotland ratchet up climate action.
Fakest accent I've ever heard. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The Green New Deal.
If you knew nothing else about the Green New Deal, you now know that everyone's talking about it and it was booed at a Trump rally. Therefore, it is A, famous, and B, probably good. And
it is also a fake accent, by the way. This is your Green News Report. Well, okay, Desi Doyen, I guess we have to say once again, Houston, we have a problem.
Yes, indeed we do. Over the weekend, the city of Houston, Texas was again under a flood emergency, but not from a hurricane, just the latest string of storms dumping torrential rains that overwhelm the city's flood control infrastructure. It's part of the new normal of extreme precipitation in dozens of states this spring. And NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, on Monday announced that the last 12 months in the United States were the wettest in recorded history for the lower 48. That will be no surprise to folks in the mid-Atlantic and especially the upper Midwest states who have been hammered with deluges and floods, costing billions of dollars in damages amid persistent historic flooding.
With the Mississippi River above flood stage for more than a month.
Actually, 40 days.
40 days now. Wow.
NOAA also announced that the last 4 years in the lower 48 states have been the warmest in U.S. history.
None of this sounds like good news.
Well, here's more not good news. President Trump's escalation of his bitter tariff trade war with China, including steep new tariffs on imported Chinese goods, has pushed China to retaliate. On Monday, China said it will slap higher tariffs on a broad swath of U.S. agriculture products and a whopping 25% tariff on U.S. liquefied natural gas.
Uh-oh.
Energy analysts say that is a big blow to the U.S. fracking industry, especially in deep red Trump-supporting states like Texas and Oklahoma. But despite the fact that Trump's escalation is further harming U.S. farmers and U.S. energy companies, on CBS, Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas minimized that with a bizarre false equivalency.
There will be some sacrifice on the part of Americans, I grant you that. But I also would say that sacrifice is pretty minimal compared to the sacrifices that our soldiers make overseas, that our fallen heroes who are laid to rest in Arlington make.
So he's saying that because nobody's dying here, we should be perfectly cool with this?
Yes.
Wow. These guys will say anything to cover for Donald Trump.
Meanwhile, Trump administration Secretary of State Mike Pompeo last week killed a joint accord with member nations of the Arctic Council, rejecting wording on a joint declaration calling man-made climate change a serious threat to the Arctic. The Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the planet, with melting sea ice creating potential new global security flashpoints over its rich natural resources. Pompeo didn't say climate change, but he was practically gleeful about its new opportunities for plunder.
The Arctic is at the forefront of opportunity and abundance. It houses 13% of the world's undiscovered oil, 30% of its undiscovered gas, and an abundance of uranium, rare earth minerals, gold, diamonds, and millions of square miles of untapped resources.
He's just giddy. He just cannot wait to plunder and exploit the previously pristine Arctic.
Not to mention making climate change even worse.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
Finally, there is some good news. Despite the Trump administration's aggressive climate denial, in recent weeks, Britain, Ireland, and Scotland have all officially declared climate emergencies, symbolic resolutions of intent to speed up efforts to achieve zero carbon emissions.
Oh, great. Our good news is a climate emergency.
In a fiery speech, Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, credited recent Extinction Rebellion protests and the student climate strike from school for inspiring their action.
Our obligations to the next generation are the most important that we carry. As First Minister of Scotland, I am declaring that there is a climate emergency and Scotland will live up to our responsibility to tackle it.
Well, at least somebody's willing to live up to the responsibility. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
So when you need—
All righty then, we are now exactly at the halfway point of this Trump-tanic Tuesday, and with some good news, the fundraising goal has fallen. Thank you to Roberto, who, let's see, took us down to $459, and thank you very kindly to Jason, who just took us down to $450 with the message, keep it lit, and dadgum if we won't just absolutely keep trying. So thank you Roberto and Jason. I must have been running that a little too hot. Brother Deacon Asa tells me it was clipping to beat the band. Well, maybe I need to pull it back a little bit. All kinds of craziness going on with this thing, so. And there you go. At the halfway point, let's go over and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, I noticed I called in yesterday. I'm not going to stay on the phone long because I know there's probably people that want to call in.
Don't worry.
I just feel weird calling 2 days in a row. But so about the whole California thing.
Yeah.
They're already doing that down here in L.A. Fortunately, we have. Down here in L.A., we have BWP and Southern California Edison. And Southern California Edison is already doing the thing about cutting people's power when it's windy already. They started that, I think they actually started that, like, earlier this year or the end of last year because of the winds and stuff like that. And on top of that, because, you said, like, PG&E and I believe Southern California. I don't know if it's Southern California Edison, but now Governor Brown added approved a rate hike, so the the customers now have to pay for the fires and stuff. You know, well, you know, we can't. Because the utilities are going, you know, bankrupt. So
right.
In order to keep the utilities from going bankrupt, we're going to raise your rates. So I'm like, excuse me, what?
So I'm just curious, not to get all personal or anything, and of course it all depends on usage and so forth. But being as how you don't get, you know, some badass winter, but you do get some badass hot weather in the summertime. What does an average power bill at Shea Tracy look like?
I have a three-bedroom, two-bathroom house with the living room, dining room, and a den and kitchen and all that. So I think our house is maybe 2,000 square feet, I think, something like that. In the summer, because we have forced air and heating, you know, so we have, you know, central air and heat, that's what it is. Our light bill runs from, from like June to October, because our bill comes every 2 months. About 800.
A month?
About anywhere between $300 and $500 a month, depending on just how often we run the air conditioner.
Wow. Do you ever give consideration to sticking some solar panels on the roof? I mean, it's a lot easier to do out there than it is here.
We are talking about it because as the rates get higher, it's getting ridiculous. Because our light bill is just crazy. It's terrible. Because I live in, you know, for those of you who don't know, I live in the San Fernando Valley, and so the valley is already as hot as it is. It's hot, you know, the valley and like the Inland Empire and stuff like that. We're landlocked, we're inland, and so it gets very hot, you know. So, I mean, there could be, like right now it's 80 degrees, so it's nice, but it could be 80 degrees here and 70 degrees over by the beach, or even 65. I mean, there's a tip, sometimes even a 20-degree temperature difference between here and just West L.A., because West L.A. is closer to the ocean than we are. So it's fucking nasty, man. And so far, so good. I mean, we've had a very mild May. We had a heat wave back in, I think it was April, and it was hitting 90, which was weird for April. And then, you know, we've had more rain in the last few months than I remember in my lifetime. And I've been here, I'll be 53 in July, so it has never rained this much in my memory. So I don't know what the summer is going to be like. I don't know if we're going to have a crazy hot summer, which we probably will, or a relatively mild summer. God only knows. But if it was anything like it was last summer, because last summer there was one day, I actually took a picture of the thermometer in my car. When I got in my car, it was 120 degrees.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's I'm like, am I in Death fucking Valley? What the hell, man? So it's bad. And yeah, about three, you know, so depending on, because when I lived in my apartment, my light bill, we didn't have, you know, central air and heat. We just had the boxes. So my light bill was only about $100 a month thereabout. And my gas bill is negligible. Did I say that right? Because fortunately, you know, I have a gas stove. And so my gas bill wasn't ridiculous because, you know, we had the heater.
How about your water heater? Is that gas or electric?
Yeah. Everything is I have nothing electric other than the, you know, my lights and the air conditioner. But the dryer's gas, our stove is gas, the heater's gas, and the water heater, hot water heater, is gas. But and also our water bill is kind of, because in our front yard we have California friendly landscaping, so our front yard is, you know, we don't have any grass in the front yard. We have plants and stuff that's pretty much indigenous to California, the drought resistant plants and stuff like that. However, in our backyard, because Jan wanted, well, she's like, it's for timber, so our backyard is all grass, which is really a bad thing, but, you know, Jan wanted timber to have her backyard. Timber don't pay no bills.
No, Kimba doesn't.
You know, so, you know, I was like, damn, the grass, because, see, when you have grass, we had to put in a sprinkler system as well. So, you know, we have a sprinkler system in the back. In the front, we have the drip sprinklers or whatever, the drip water or however, I don't know, gardening, landscaping, stuff that I don't care to know about. And so it's just a drip irrigation. That's what it is. So in the front, we have drip irrigation. And like I said, we don't have to turn, you know, maybe once or twice a week do we have to water in the front. But in the back, yeah. As a matter of fact, I get emails from DWP that shows our water usage. And in comparison, I feel terrible, but in comparison to, like, the rest of the area, our water usage is definitely above average. And like I said, it's mostly because of our backyard. We have actual grass in the backyard, which, again, not my idea. But, you know,
it's the right thing. Seriously, there are companies that literally, I mean, I've heard Sparky telling the stories of the people who go door to door trying to get people to lease solar panels. Would that knock your billing down?
It would, but the thing is, you'd have the bill from the lease, you know, because you don't own the, you know, so you're paying for the lease.
You're swapping one devil for another.
Right, unless you outright own it. And but I was talking to Fran, I'm like, we really need to really seriously think about getting solar panels.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you could buy them outright, and they're cheaper out there than they are out here, and then tie them into one of those Tesla wall batteries.
Right, exactly, because they sell those.
And that way, once if they're bought, they're bought. And you're not just pissing money away on a lease.
Exactly. I'm not going to lease it. We're not going to do that. And here's the thing: we just repaired part of the roof, the roof that covers the den, because we had a really bad leak, and so we fixed that. And the guy who did our roof, you know, we had like about five companies come out and give us estimates. And out of the five, only one guy's like, the only thing you need to fix is this part. The rest of your roof is fine. You got at least another 20 years on the rest of that roof. It's like, it's just this part that needs to be fixed. And we're like, so which guy do you think we went with?
Sure.
So, you know, but it's just, you know, I have to really sit down. Now, that's the difference between Jen and I, which, you know, makes her happy about, you know, when I'm like a dog with a bone sometimes. I will do the research on, if we start really considering doing this, I will do the research on the different companies, how long they've been around, their rating, whatnot, because there's a lot of fly-by-night companies, especially out here. And so, you know, the fear is, you know, you invest all this money, you get the solar roof, but if something happens, will these people be around in 5 years? You know, so there at that. But yeah, we, you know, really, to me, we, especially living in a state like in California or Arizona, or you know, states where it's just suns, Arizona, Nevada, and all that, California, our government should be subsidizing. I mean, I know there is a tax incentive. Well, I don't know if they still have it, as a matter of fact, because especially with the way they did income taxes and taking away things that you can deduct and, you know, stuff like that. So I don't even know if there's still a deduction for solar panels. But, like, when we did our yard, if you, you know, you could, in L.A., for LADWP at least, they had programs that you took up, you know, you take pictures of your front and backyard, you give them their measurements and stuff, and that if they approve you, they were paying for you to rip up your grass and put in drought resistant plants. So I'm like, well, why don't they do the same thing for roofs, for solar energy? Especially with what's going on with the wildfires out here.
Well, because people, I mean, here's my guess, because even when you put on water restrictions, there's always some asshole that wants to water the lawn.
Oh, yeah. And that asshole could be my wife, but anyway. Not even she was good. But, you know, and I have to say, for the most part, when that was really bad a couple of years ago, you had people had lawn signs on, because everybody's grass was, you know, pretty. You could go down a block and pretty much everybody's grass was brown, except for, like you said, that one ditch. But they actually had lawn signs on people's grasses, you know, and saying brown is the new green. You know, people were actually, you know, very proud not to water, you know, because we have watering restrictions. And so, you know, people really, a lot of people really adhere to it. I mean, I would say, and it's definitely a gross guesstimate, but I really feel like at least maybe up to 80% of Southern Californians, where people, at least in L.A., really adhered to, you know, water restrictions, because, you know, they were reported on the news and how our water levels were doing, and we held tight for the last 2 years of our drought. So people really worked hard on working to conserve water. They really, really did, you know, and I'm just glad that we did. And we made it through the drought, because the drought was like 5 years.
Well, let me shift gears with you for a second, Tracy, because, you know, being as how you drive cab all over L.A., and being as how I know nothing. I know nothing about the lay of the land in that area. Tell me about an area called Beverly Glen.
Okay, it's Beverly Glen is a canyon between basically Westwood and the valley. So there's an actual canyon. It's a street. So if you're coming from the valley, it starts off as Van Nuys Boulevard coming from the valley and Valley Village and all that. And it converges and it turns into Beverly Glen. Beverly Glen is a canyon. And so it's a connector canyon between Westwood, Bel Air, well, more so Bel Air.
Is it a Tony place? It is a well-to-do place?
Big money. I mean, if your house costs less than $3 million, then you might as well be living, then you're slumming it.
Okay, so do you have any idea why I'm asking?
Who lives there and what's happening? Because I'm going, okay, this has to, why?
Because this sounds like something out of Alabama
or West Virginia or Kentucky or Arkansas?
Why? What's happening? Wait, what?
The 100 block of North Beverly Glen.
No.
Where the cops put on a raid.
Excuse me, what?
Yeah, there was a raid by the cops in an area called Holmby Hills.
That's basically Beverly Hills, yeah.
And they went in, and the next thing you know, they were calling the ATF. And they said, y'all might want to come by here.
Is that what the 200, like a shit ton of guns?
Yeah, over 1,000.
Yeah. That was like last week, I guess it was.
World War II era Tommy gun, 44 Magnum handguns, 357 mags, expensive like deer rifles. Uzis with silencers, 9mm Lugers, AR-15s. it took 30 cops over 12 hours to take all of the guns and the gun parts and the ammunition out of the house.
Yeah. And I think that was one of those days I was going to call in, but I got sidetracked. So I couldn't. I forgot about it because I'm.
I mean, that's enough. That's enough for a. That's enough for a small war.
Yeah, and like you said, the 100 North Block of Beverly Glen. I mean, basically, you are in home. Like they said, Holmby Hills. Home is like it's the kind of like you got Holmby Hills, you got Bel Air, Holmby Hills, Bel Air, and Beverly Hills. That's kind of. Where they all converge, right up in that area.
Well, the story said that Jay-Z and Beyonce live about less than a mile from the place, and it's also nearby the Playboy Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And they took a 57-year-old dude named Gerard Sens into custody on suspicion of violation, over 1,000 guns, suspicion of violating the California law on assault weapons and 50 caliber Browning machine guns.
Yeah, I saw the news footage of it, and when they were, they had all the guns out on display, and I'm sitting there like, because when I first saw it, I thought maybe they had raided somewhere in the Inland Empire, Riverside, Ontario. Up in Tahunga, Sutherland, somewhere where, and not to disparage these parts of Southern California, but it's kind of messy kind of places up in there. So,
well, they say the place was kind of run down and shitty, which is kind of interesting because the guy is the partner, longtime companion of a woman who has three daughters with the son of J. Paul Getty.
Wow. Really? Well, just because it's a nice, people have money or it's in a nice area doesn't mean shit. Look at, what was that movie, Grey Garden? With the Kennedy women? Were they Kennedys?
Yeah, I don't remember.
They lived in abject. It was horrible squalor, and the house was falling apart around them. I think they were. I don't know if they were. I don't know if they were Kennedys or Jacqueline Bouvier. I think they might have actually been relatives of Jackie Kennedy Onassis. So I think it was. But still. They descended into mental illness. It was a mother and a daughter. They were batshit crazy. As a matter of fact, there was a movie about it with Drew Barrymore and was it Diane Keaton? I forget. But, yeah, yeah. So, No, so that makes sense, though, if the house was in disrepair. It was bad. Jackie Kennedy announces Eddie Bouvier, Bill, and her mother Edith are the sole inhabitants of Long Island State. Yeah. The documentary was in 75. And then they just followed them around, and then they made a movie about it. But anywho, yeah. No, so... So we get crazy out here too, Bob. It's not, but you're right. When you think of somebody having a, now, is that, be okay, so what is the difference between a stockpile and an arsenal? At that point, if you have over 1,000 weapons.
Well, I think it's only an arsenal if, like, you're a member of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense or... maybe, you know, maybe your name is Ahmed, then it's an arsenal.
Right. But if, when it's white people, what is it?
It's a stockpile and they're, hobbyists and collectors.
Oh, they're gun enthusiasts.
Yes, they are enthusiasts. Just like those freaks down in Alabama and Georgia and Kentucky and Ohio, those are embryo enthusiasts.
Oh, speaking of that, and I'm so glad you said this because Todd and I were trying to we were talking this morning, and we were trying. I was trying to remember what is it called when I can go from one state to another. If what I do in that state is legal and I come back home, I can't get in trouble for doing what I did in that state because it was legal, you know, because of what they're trying to do with the abortion, these abortion laws, that if a girl gets pregnant in a state where they're trying to make it illegal and they go to a state where it is legal, now they're trying to, you know, say that she can still go to jail if they find out. What is that called when you go from one state to another and do whatever it is in that state that's legal and come home and you're finding...
Full faith and credit.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's in the Constitution. The full faith and credit clause says that, California has to honor a West Virginia driver's license.
Okay.
Because West Virginia has to honor a California driver's license.
Okay.
But it's not blanket because, for instance, one of the dearest things that the National Ruble Association would like would be that if, say, we got a law, because we do, we got a law in West Virginia that says you don't have to have a concealed carry permit. You can go and buy you a gun and drop it in your pocket and groovy. And take it anywhere it's legal to take a gun. Well, the National Ruble Association wants a law that says that if it's legal to do that in West Virginia, it's legal to do that in L.A.
In California. No.
It can get kind of complicated. Because on the other hand, if we had a federal law, if the Congress would just do the right thing and, say, legalize cannabis nationwide, we could solve a lot of problems real quick.
Real quick.
On the other hand, a really good example is lawyering, because every state bar is a little petty fiefdom that wants absolute control over the practice of law in its state. So, some states have what's called reciprocity. If you're licensed, say, for 5 years in one state, you're automatically licensable or licensed if you need to go practice in a different state. But
well, that's how it is in California with nurse's license, where my mom, it's reversed because, see, my mom got her nurse's license here in California. And when she moved to North Carolina, because our testing and our laws and stuff are much more stringent than they are in other states. Basically, the two states that you really don't have to worry about retaking the test, or, you know, to be a nurse, to get your nurse's license in a different state, New York and California, because the standards are so high that you can go to any other state and work as a nurse Whereas if she had went from North Carolina to here, if she had gotten her license in North Carolina, she'd have to take the state board here over. I mean, not over, but she would have to take the state boards here to, in order to be able to be a nurse in the state of California or whatever. I mean, depending on what state you live in. So, you know, because
yeah,
we have, you know, we're in California, so we have, you know, we have some serious regulations here. And
right, and California doesn't want just any old lawyer off the turnip truck popping up and practicing in California because it's complicated business. And yeah, so consequently, you know, I'll bet you, I'm not sure if Billable Rick practiced somewhere else first, but I'll bet you he had to pass the California bar.
Right.
Which I've been told, so which I've been told is a season in hell.
Yeah, I've had friends that were on suicide watch after taking the bars.
And meanwhile, your Alabamas, your Georgias, and your Louisianas don't want a bunch of petty foggers coming from the big city down there and taking away all the local lawyers' business.
Right, right. They don't want the California lawyers coming in and doing the Walmart.
Right. Now, lawyers can go and do that on a limited admission that's called Pro Hoc Vitae. And that's for just the purpose of that litigation, then you got to go home.
Then you got to boogie. Okay, you did what you had to do. Go home.
And in a way, you know, the Supreme Court solved the problem with marriage equality just by saying, no, it's legal nationwide. Shut up.
Right.
Which is what led us to Sister Clark Kim Davis and Roy Tolamore in Alabama and that various and sundry stupidity.
And when Kim Davis got beat as Clark by, you know, the person that she denied the marriage license to.
Yeah, because karma. Because karma is a karma. Hard.
Karma don't play.
No, hard.
You know,
hard.
It's a hard. You know, you don't mess with people. You know, and just the people who feel that they can mess with people because of just because. And here's what's happening with our country is these people who, because I'm white, I'm a man, I'm a white woman, I'm a white man and whatnot and so forth, I am now entitled. You know, you guys, they were already entitled. Come on now. I mean, you're white. There's this, you know, inborn, you were born with this entitlement. That's, you know. But then, you know, they got their president, and so now they feel that they can do whatever the hell they want to do. I mean, did you hear about the latest, about the woman who not only called, or she tweeted to the D.C. Metro Transit Authority or whatever, took a picture of this person eating her breakfast on a train going from one assignment to the other where they only have like a 20-minute break. And she going on, you know, you shouldn't be eating on the train and blah, 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 blah. Took a picture of her and tweeted about it and sent the picture to D.C. Metro. I don't know if the, you know, and so, of course, the internet pounced and were like, really? You know, you're putting this woman's job in jeopardy because why? And apparently she had a book deal. Yeah, they dropped her. That she had two book deals or something, and one dropped her, and the other one was considering.
Really?
There's repercussions. And see, you know, and I think this is, you know, Tom and I had this conversation about, oh, yeah, we did this morning, about, you know, yes, freedom of speech, freedom of expression. You could say whatever the hell you want to say. Half a desert, there's going to be, you know, in the real and just world, every time you said something that was a lie or just horrible or whatever the case may be, there would be consequences, not only consequences, but there would be repercussions. Or is that the same thing? But anywho, you know, that's the problem, and this is what's happening, that people are saying and doing whatever the hell they want to do, and they're getting away with it. Case in point, the person that's in the White House right now.
Ta-da.
And I use the word person very loosely.
Well, in that case, yeah, very. So loosely as to have almost no form or substance whatsoever.
Exactly.
Hey, Tracy, so, I'm going to roll because I got a story here.
You got to tell the story. So I'm going to.
Oh, this is going to be. Yeah, I mean, every now and then, and Agnes turned me on to this. Every now and then, you see one of these things, and it just so begs for wider dissemination, just as a general understanding of where we are as a country right now. I mean, I read this earlier this afternoon, and I mean, it's very seldom that I say, you know, oh, I'm going to hit this story, you know, no, you know, be damned, because this is such a picture of Trump America in 2019 that it has to be spread.
And before I go, what do we call these things? Trump is no longer Titanic 2C.
Trump-tanic. Trump-tanic.
So Trump-tanic Tuesday, $25
count. Cool. Well, thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much. It's badly needed because I think we are at.
I know. I heard.
We're like $450 right now.
And if the challenge is met, then I'll throw in another 10.
Okay. So cool. That would get us down below $400, which would be huge. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much.
And I'm excited for you to watch the final episode of Post.
Yeah, I was going to say. I
know Agnes is killing you.
Well, she wasn't real happy with me last night. But, yeah.
No, I know she wasn't. So I'll be looking forward.
But you know how it is with season. I don't know what it is, but you know how it is with season finales. I just didn't want to. I didn't want to go to sleep with a finale in our heads.
No. You need to be full, and especially this particular episode, you need to be fully conscious to see and so you can take in everything that is going to transpire on that episode. So. I will give my adieu, and I'm looking forward to hearing that story.
And yes. I will report on the outcome.
Awesome.
All right.
I'll catch you later.
See you, Tracy. Bye. Bye now. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver from Southern California. And hey, thank you to Tracy for the challenge. If somebody out there will jump in with $25. Tracy will double it and add 10 more, and that'll get us down to $390 to go to crawl out of the hole. And that means only $190 to finish yesterday. And if the challenge is met, we will finally have finished last week, which is awesome. Thank you, Tracy, and hopefully somebody will jump in. Thank you to James. Wait a minute, got a cowbell for James. James became... And whenever I see it and the opportunity presents itself, definitely a cowbell for becoming a new Patreon subscriber. And remember, it's the 14th of the month. If you become a Patreon subscriber, you're not even going to be billed until the first day of June. Awesome, huh? So that's a possibility, and it's all there at Contribute, under the Contribute tab at headon.live. Thank you, James, and thank you, Tracy, for the challenge. Now all we got to do is meet it. Yay. Maybe, I don't know, maybe this story means more to me than it does, or it will, to y'all. Oh, wait, what's that? A message from Zed. I want to put a new subscriber challenge out here. I'll bump my monthly subscription by $5 for 1 year for each new subscriber you get until the end of May, up to 6. That's $30. If those two subscriptions you got earlier this month were new, then I'll count those as 2 of the 6. They were. Those are new. It wasn't confusing at all. It's the I Sold My Money Pit Bumping Up the Horn Subscriber Base Challenge, courtesy of Zed. Thank you, Zed. So there's room for four new subscribers. And for every new subscriber, Zed's going to bump his subscription by $5. Two slots are filled, thanks to James and a previous new subscriber. Thank you. Hopefully that will be acted upon, especially this particular space of the month, because it does get a little thin. And there's Jude. Thank you, dear Jude, in the Great Northwest, meeting Tracy's challenge. So that means we're now down below $400. Thank you, Jude. You are a pearl of great price. Thank you so much. Now, the story. Like I said, Agnes turned me on to it. It's over on Twitter. An individual who identifies himself as the chair of the Department of Economics and Finance at Middle Tennessee State University, which is a sort of a, I guess you'd say it's a commuter camp, it's big school, MTSU, good school. And his daughter, he posts a picture of his little girl. She's 11 years old, and she's sitting in the midst of a blue horseshoe sculpture. A symbol of tradition and good fortune for Middle Tennessee State University. Those who touch the blue horseshoe will be granted good luck, the plaque says at the base of the blue horseshoe. She's not crying or anything. She's just sitting in the middle of the blue horseshoe, soaking up all the good luck she can get. The tweet says, "Comment with support for my 11-year-old daughter. She was removed from class and sent to the principal's office for the rest of the day last Thursday for shouting, 'Stop it! Put your hands down now!' to a group of students giving the Nazi salute." You know, the stiff arm, the Sieg Heil. That's bad enough. And let's do remember that the school itself is not identified, but of course, Tennistan is one of those states that has been polluted with magnet schools and charter this and whatnot. And so here's what happened. And bear in mind, there's going to be stuff in here that, if you're like me, is going to make you want to bark at, eat dirt and run rabbits. So, the genesis of this thing is that at the school, they had a program called Living History. Let me back up. I think I got rid of the story. Let me see if it's way deep in the tabs. I think I got rid of it, but maybe I didn't. No. How about that? I didn't. I hang on to stories because sometimes I have this feeling that it's going to come in handy. This comes from a TV station called WEEK. And it's and this part of the story, WEEK, NBC 25 News, your home team. And sometimes it's difficult to tell exactly. Illinois. Pekin Community High School. The superintendent there confirmed
back about 3 weeks into April, that a social studies teacher by the name of Kevin Pummel was resigning. Kevin Pummel resigned as a social studies teacher because he was caught bragging about recruiting students and indoctrinating students into what we now in 2019 euphemistically refer to as white nationalism. An anti-fascist group called Identify Europa drilled down into Kevin Pummel, Kevin Pummel's online life, and said that he actively used his position as a high school teacher to advance white nationalist ideas and myths with the children he is entrusted to teach. What Identify Europa found was Pummel making, on a regular basis, disparaging comments about people of color in the United States, and said that he had red-pilled some of the male students in his class about the dangers of immigrants, using language that has also been used by the President of the United States. Kevin Pummel said they realize we're being invaded. So we'll call that a win. But when I read this story, I immediately wondered just how many other Klan simps, neo-Nazis, and whatnot we have in all segments of society. So now we go back to Middle Tennessee, where at about the same time that this guy was getting busted for indoctrinating students into racism and bigotry in Illinois, a teacher at a school in Middle Tennessee of, 11-year-olds. What's 11-year-olds? Fifth grade, sixth grade? They have living history. And one of the children in the class was assigned by one of the teachers in the class to portray, wait for it, nah, you're not waiting for it, you already know, Adolf Hitler. So the kid's going to wear a little Adolf Hitler uniform. We don't know if he went with probably the khaki. And they have rehearsals for living history. And so when little Hitler comes out and delivers the Sieg Heil stiff arm salute, 10 to 20 of the precious little scholars in the class get up and perform the salute in return. The little girl of the guy who sent out the tweet immediately objected. The teacher, by email, said she was given an open platform at that time to appropriately voice her concerns and share with her peers her feelings. And then the teachers tell her not to bring it up again, because they were going to be doing some Sieg Heilin' for a while, because they were rehearsing for living history. And because she had objected, in the days and weeks following, the students in her class, being early adolescents, which is another word for saying little assholes, start walking around the school, Sieg Heiling each other when they pass. The little girl with the morals and the ethics complains and says that giving the Sieg Heil salute is wrong. So then the little assholes decide that they're going to double down tormenting this child, and they plan a mass Sieg Heil of her when she walks into the classroom. She gets wind of it and waits for her teacher to enter the classroom before she does. That teacher, a different teacher, tells the students that the Nazi salute is wrong and not to do it again. So they keep rehearsing, and the kids keep Sieg Heiling. And then they have the final rehearsal for Living History and the World War II group. Now, get this. The World War II group, Living History, has an assignment to be Hitler, not Churchill. Churchill's got his own problems. Not FDR. Certainly not Stalin. Not Patton. Not George Marshall. Not General Bernard Law Montgomery. But Hitler. And so they go back to doing the Nazi salute. And at the final dress rehearsal, I presume it's dress rehearsal, 10 to 20 students get up and do it again. At this point, the little girl, this strong, motivated, intelligent, apparently well brought up little girl, says, "Stop it! Put your hands down now." And that was last week. And for having mentioned it, she, not the little Nazi wannabes, is removed from the classroom, left to stand alone in the hallway until a teacher comes and tells her she was being disrespectful. The child then says, "It's wrong for them to do that, and you should do more to make them stop." And then the little girl begins to cry. Another teacher, the one who originally assigned the kid to play Hitler, says that the child was being disrespectful in her tone and her body language to her teachers. And tells another individual to take the little girl to the principal, Dr. Somebody, whose last name begins with a B. And the principal tells her she should not have been disrespectful. And then the teacher who assigned the kid to play Hitler calls the little girl's mama and says that your daughter's been disciplined and removed from the classroom for being disruptive and disrespectful. You need to tell your little girl how to properly behave in a school classroom. Now, the teacher does note that the disruption came in response to her objecting to the salute being given back. It. Mama says, "What do you mean by it?" And she says, "Well, the Nazi salute." And this is actually the first time Mama hears about Nazi salutes at the school. And in the meantime, the little kid's still sitting in the principal's office, kept out of class. So then, this past Thursday, on May the 9th, the little kids at this school do their Living History project, including Little Hitler and more Nazi salutes. You know, what? Did this teacher decide to go with Hitler because she knew she'd get in deep shit if she had some kid dress up as Nathan Bedford Forrest, surrounded by a bunch of little fucking Klansmen? And there in the living history performance, once again, little Hitler performs the bloodthirsty Nazi salute. Reminder, this is 2019 in Middle Tennessee, which is not too terribly far from Nashville, not 1933 in Munich. Between 11:30 and 12 that day, on May the 10th, they have an awards performance, the McTonys, to give awards for the living history performances, and the World War II era gets an award. And the little guy who played Hitler goes up to accept the award. And when he accepts the award, four little boys give the Nazi salute. And they're looking at each other and grinning. And no teacher intervenes. When Mama objects again, well, back up. The little girl, the troublemaker, the outside agitator, her group wins an award too. And she makes an acceptance speech, and she uses her speech to explain again that making the Nazi salute around school is wrong, and she asks the assembled parents to please speak with their children and explain what that thing means. The teacher who originally assigned Hitler, to the little kid to play Hitler, finally writes to Mama and says, "Your daughter expressed her feelings inappropriately once before during rehearsal early on in our preparations, and she was given an open platform at that time to appropriately voice her concerns and share with her peers her feelings. Then she was asked not to address it again. When she yelled out during the final rehearsal with all fifth grade students in the room and was disrespectful with her tone," yes, that's right, tone policing, "and her body language to me and Mrs. J while we were trying to discuss her behavior with her, that is when I phoned you to share with you the behavior, yelling out and being disrespectful with her tone and body language to teachers, and I informed you that she was taking a break to calm down. I called to share my concerns, and I asked you to address it at home with her that evening. After our conversation, her calming break continued, and she went to visit Dr. B as I was needed to finalize showcase matters. This gave her an opportunity to continue to calm down and share her concerns with him while we finish preparing for showcase and dismissal. Please let us know if we can be further assistance. Sincerely." Why are those women allowed to teach school? Why are they in a classroom? Why would any teacher assign any child to ever portray Adolf Hitler? That is, in fact, obscene. It had no political, social, or artistic redeeming value. Jude would like me to give the name of the school. I don't know the name of the school. This thing's been liked 29,000 times on Twitter. But when I first saw it, it was around, I think, 7,000. It's been retweeted 7,248 times. If you want to see the whole thread, at Keith, K-E-I-T-H, at Keith J. Gamble is the daddy. And the people who are seeing this are, for the most part, appalled. But make no mistake, that little girl is a patriot.
that little girl is a better representative of what we hope the future of this country will be than any of the little any of the little punkins who just stood up and gave the salute, because just standing up and giving the goddamn salute is how you get 1933. I don't know if this is a private school or a public school. And I don't much care for that shitty language about calming time. I mean, I guess calming time is better than just beating the child for opposing Nazis. I wonder if that school would welcome someone, say, a Holocaust survivor to come in and speak to the class about it. But this is part of a larger tableau. Because during the Holocaust remembrance in Russellville, Arkansas recently, a group of likely Republican voters carrying Nazi flags protested and brought a bullhorn to the Holocaust remembrance, again, in Russellville, Arkansas. And with a nonagenarian there who had borne direct witness to the liberation of one of the camps, who was describing what he saw on that day, those likely Republican voters with their Nazi flags used their bullhorns and screamed and chanted all together, 6 million more. 6 million more. 6 million more. Those very fine people have not been condemned by Donald Trump, even though the story went all over the country. It's in Arkansas, the natal state of both Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags and her grifter daddy. Neither of them have condemned it. Tom Cotton, the senator, whom you heard on the Green News Report telling American farmers to shut the fuck up because they're not getting shot in a war, they're just getting fucked by the president. He didn't say a goddamn word either. And Liz Cheney, daughter of Count Dicula, who had a hissy yesterday because of remarks made perhaps inelegantly by Representative Rashida Tlaib, in which she said she takes some small measure of solace in the fact that in the post-World War II, post-Holocaust era, Palestinian lands were used, even though Palestinians were abused and killed and dispossessed and dehumanized, that it was the Palestinians who essentially provided the safe space for Israel to be founded. Liz Cheney, who had kittens with crocheted tails over what she imagined Rashida Tlaib to have actually said, she didn't say a word about Russellville, Arkansas, either. And they probably won't have anything to say about this. Jesus, this is disgusting. But far more than disgusting, it is terrifying. I am neither Muslim nor Jew, so I cannot imagine how terrifying it is for them. But I can try to be an ally. And I can stand up on my little hind legs behind my microphone here
and voice the fact that this disgusts me and terrifies me for the future of this nation. Because these fuckers are on the march, these filthy fuckers. And they're not going to stop with the Jews and the Muslims. No, they'd in the name of that 6 million more, they'd be more than happy to shove a few of us in too. You gay? Guess what? Gays went in the ovens in Germany and under the Third Reich. And the modern Nazis would be happy to do the same. Are you liberal? Yes, you are. Into the ovens with you, too. Because the Nazis believe in a certain purity that exists only in their own sick, twisted mind. And that's going to require the elimination of a whole lot more than Muslims and Jews. Their friends, the Klan, will insist that the roundup include black folks. And the good God-fearing white folks out west will insist that it include the Hispanic folks. So, every time that Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbag says something like, I don't know how many times we have to say this, we've denounced it, okay? Leave it alone. It's pretty obvious that they have not denounced it thoroughly enough, and their words are drowned out by their goddamned actions. I guess there's no way of knowing, but would you care to bet how Mrs. Teacher there, who assigned a child to play Adolf Hitler, voted in 2016? Would you care to bet how she votes every chance she gets to go to the polls? I wouldn't care to bet, unless you were betting that she was some sort of liberal. Because anyone who would assign a child to play Adolf Hitler, well, I'm pretty sure there's a little red hat somewhere in her house. I could be wrong, but I'm damned if I can figure out a legitimate educational purpose in dressing up a child as Adolf Hitler. A child who has no idea of the detail involved, and has obviously been poorly taught. About what happened between 1933 and 1945. Oh, thank you. Barkway knows the name of the school in Tennessee. It's the McFadden School of Excellence in Murfreesboro. It is a public school. Disgusting. I don't know what passes for a teachers union in Tennessee. But I hope the hell I don't see a story about them coming out with a full-throated defense of this horrible, horrible, horrible blight on the idea of educators being professionals. But that's 2019, not just in Middle Tennessee, but in America. And if one does not actively take every legal step to make sure that Nazism doesn't continue to grow in this country, by God, grow it will. I hope you understand why I felt like it was so necessary to get that story out. Now the question is, will there be any repercussions for it whatsoever? Or will the little girl just be left to she and her parents fend for themselves? Again, one hopes, it would appear that Daddy has a fairly secure position. But in a place like Tennessee, nothing is for certain. Okay. Onward. Onward. Oh, one last thing. Is there any way to suss out and drive from our midst the Nazi sympathizers who have determinedly worked quietly and in the shadows to infiltrate every aspect of our public life? Now, I know as of Skokie, we've got some notion that Nazis are entitled to free speech protection under the First Amendment. Should they? Somehow or another, Germany manages to be free, and it's not okay to be a Nazi. Lots of countries have hate speech laws that they enforce, and it's not like their citizens are wallowing around in totalitarianism. I fear we're going to reach a crossing of the Rubicon where we have to decide whether or not having a free and open civil society is more important than having Nazis, or whether having Nazis is more important to having a free and open civil society. How have we failed so monumentally that we have so many of these piss-poor, shitty, miserable, violent, hate-filled, pathetic examples for attempts at members of the human species? How did it happen? Steve on the West Coast says, Bob, this is a tragedy of generations. But the teachers and admin are idiots and freaks. Children can mock and parody and easily trash every sort of horrible thing, but they first have to be taught by responsible and accountable educators. I don't suppose anything by Mel Brooks is on the curriculum anyway. Well, I can't imagine a bunch of 11-year-olds sitting around and watching The Producers either. I don't know. I do not. Okay, let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Well, you done brought me down, Bob. Jesus. What year is this? I see my calendar on my handy-dandy digital phone here, my magic smartphone, and it says it's May 14th, 19. Maybe there's a time warp. See, this story, now you may find this hard to believe, Bob, but this story was a wee bit of a puzzler to me. Yeah, we live in Trump America. Yeah, it is south of the Mason-Dixon line, or as Moms Mabley used to call it, south of the Scorch Curtain, okay? But because my thinking was, well, wait a minute, this is a public school, right? McFadden School, is that a public
McFadden
school?
McFadden School of Excellence in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
But it's not a, you don't know if it's a public or private.
No, it's public.
Oh, it is public. Well, see, my thinking assumed that it's a public school in a jurisdiction with a school board, okay? And I don't know, silly me. But what unpuzzled it for me was when you said Murfreesboro, Tennessee. That is the hometown of a publication that's been continuously produced since 1934, founded by a guy named John R. Rice. And the name of the publication is The Sword of the Lord.
Well, that's catchy.
Believe it or not, I was once on their mailing list. I'm not even sure now how I got on their mailing list. I was on a lot of crazy mailing lists when I was a Jesus freak. There was an outfit up in Pennsylvania that was vehemently anti-Catholic and had the literature with footnotes to prove it as in terms of why. But The Sword of the Lord is one of these independent, far-right-wing Bible publications. It was sort of like, you remember Carl McIntyre up in Collingswood, New Jersey, Cape May, New Jersey, who used to have the pro-Vietnam War marches up and down Pennsylvania Avenue?
No, I seem to remember. That's kind of outside my age bracket, but I remember something of it.
And when ping-pong diplomacy with red, godless red China was taking place in the late 60s, early 70s, and Nixon went to China to hobnob with Mao Zedong and Zhou Enlai, the old Carl McIntyre was beside himself because he believed in Formosa. Where did Chiang Kai-shek run Taiwan?
Taiwan.
Okay. Well, Carl was just beside himself, and his motto was kill a commie for Christ. Well, Sword of the Lord and its founder, John R. Rice, who's gone on to his reward years ago, was one of these and still is one of these very basic, independent, fundamentalist, no National Council of Churches bullshit type of religious organization. And you've got to figure the community that brought us Sword of the Lord back in 1934 and to this very day had to be somewhat suspect. Wouldn't you think?
I would not fight you over that.
Okay, knowing only what you know about what I've said, you would think that the community would be suspect. I don't know, Bob. I'm not real happy with it. I think it's crazy that there wasn't an administrator or a teacher or a principal or a guidance counselor or someone with some kind of authority in that horrible little school system in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, didn't say, now wait. You know? And maybe they've all become apologists and closet Nazis. Maybe you're right. I don't know. I would hate to think that. But this is the world that we live in. I'm glad you shared the story, because it's one of those head shakers. It's like, what the fluorescent fuck is this? You know, it just makes me sad, Bob. And here I was all happy and stuff because I'm making pretty good progress getting the place pulled together for the visit by the housing people to inspect the premises on Monday. You know, and I was feeling pretty good, but then you had to do it, Bob. You had to tell me about the crazy ass. The only thing that you didn't say was when the little boy who was portraying Hitler gave the salute, you said they all returned the Nazi salute. You didn't, I think you said they returned the salute to beat the band. You missed your opportunity to beat the Oompa band.
Well, okay.
You know, you know.
To beat, they returned it to beat the Putsch.
Yeah. God help us. Jesus. I don't know. I want to get to something more lighthearted, if we may. Yesterday you were talking about the state of Alabama, your home state, banning battery-operated dildos, or as they call them down there, dildonts. Okay? And somebody wondered if that law is still in effect. Apparently it went into effect in 2007, and they have not changed their mind. I don't even think you can, like, write...
A couple of stores tried to open up.
Yeah.
And I think they lost court battles over it, although don't quote me.
Well, it doesn't surprise me.
I just remember that at some point after it went into effect, a dear friend of the Reverend Jerry Falwell, who was a pastor at a Baptist church in Montgomery, whose wife was out of town. Well, she found him when she came back with various of those illegal devices crammed in a couple of different orifices, and he had suffocated to death inside not one but two wetsuits.
Wetsuits, yeah.
That occasioned a parody song here that achieved a certain degree of notoriety at one point in time.
I've heard tell of it, Bob. I've never heard it, I don't
think. I think you have, but yeah. It's based on a John Prine tune with tremendous apologies. It's based because it happened in Montgomery, Alabama, and it's based on a John Prine song called Angel from Montgomery.
You want to play it? Or?
No, but the line is, please send me a dildo. I can't buy one in Montgomery. Mm. Yeah, it's graphic, and John Fox did a magnificent job bringing my lyrics to light.
And that's the world we live in. You can give a Nazi salute in some places without fear of retribution to beat the Oompa band, but you can't buy an orgasmatron in Alabama. What's the world coming to, Bob?
And as Ron in Raleigh points out, you may not remember, but I do, Candace Owens got into trouble by saying Hitler was only trying to make Germany great again. Black conservatives and Nazis are strange bedfellows indeed.
God, make Germany great again.
Yeah.
Well, what did Marge Schott, the former...
Marge, oh, God, who can forget Marge? Hitler only got in trouble. Hitler had some good ideas, but he went too far. Wasn't that what she said?
Well, no, she was saying that, well, that was part of it, but she was, before that, her preamble was how he revived the German economy and built the Autobahn.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is a howling myth. The Autobahn was already, but let's not bother.
Jesus. Bob, I just, what was I watching the other night on PBS? Oh, it was a little documentary, ran about an hour, and it was some elderly Holocaust survivors who were children when they were taken to the death camps, but somehow managed to live to tell the tale. And I forget the name of the documentary. I think it was like Remaining Survivors, or I don't know. Survivors is in the title. And these men and women are up in their 90s by now. And they are really, it's like World War II veterans at large. The pool of them diminishes by the day. Living witnesses, eyewitnesses to the Holocaust, that's another diminishing pool, because even if they were children during World War II, there is this thing called age, and eventually it catches up with you. Somebody was saying, and I don't know if it was on your show or not, maybe it was Hartman some years ago, was talking about the excesses that brought about the depression, which was a global depression. The lessons learned out of that caused some reforms to occur. And I think it took 25 years for the stock market, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, I think it was 1952 or 1954, it went from 29 to either 52 or 54 for the Dow Jones Industrial Average to reach the high that the stock market was at when it went into the toilet. But like the Securities and Exchange Commission came out of it, the law having to do with investment banking versus commercial banking came out of that era. And a number of reforms happened. But what Hartman or whoever it was trying to say was, when time comes that you don't have living among you people who remember not only the run-up, but the crash and the aftermath of it, all manner of financial mischief can happen. And it's true about that, and I think it's also true about the Holocaust. I've never understood people...
Well, no, I think that is corollary to something that I've argued here in the U.S., namely that Republicans weren't able to go after Social Security until the first generation that had known Social Security and had known the poverty pre-Social Security had died off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my grandmother passed away at 90 in, or at 91 in 1985. And up until that moment, Social Security was largely left alone. But
what year
once
was that again?
1985.
That's
when they started messing with it. Because the generation that had watched their elders descend into misery and poverty would never have let a politician, a politician's career survive had he proposed such a thing.
Oh, it was the third rail.
Well, it's what Eisenhower alluded to when he said that any party that tried it would become a regional rump party.
He forgot the tea. Tea rump.
Well, I mean, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
But I think that runs corollary to what you're talking about. I mean, I at my age, okay, and I have been told that I can now officially refer to myself as a Gen Xer. I happen to have been raised by Depression-era parents who lived through the Second World War, both here and abroad. And they had kinfolks who were part of the military effort that liberated the camps. And so it was just a matter of course that I was taught about them. And how hateful and how awful. And I don't know. Maybe my classmates weren't
weren't taught, and therefore they didn't teach theirs. But I know and Agnes's uncle walked across Europe, marched across Europe in the defeat of the Nazis, wounded multiple times, Purple Hearts. And I know that between the two of us, that when the issue arose in our home, it was all stop, we're going to deal with this right damned now.
Yeah.
Because, see, our kids went to school with kids who openly talked the same kind of shit that Marge Schott talked.
And think nothing of it, I'm sure.
And as far as I know, are still talking it.
Well, see, that raises
But it really did. It occasioned an all stop and a, if I ever, and this was either me or Agnes delivered it, I delivered it, if we ever hear of you espousing any of that shit, it will be the worst day of your life.
Well, I know we're getting close on time, but let me close with a thing to ponder in the night ahead and the days and months ahead, because we're only talking roughly 18 months until the 2020 election. How do we unseat a person who welcomes, who calls them fine people, who's an apologist for, if not an outright believer in such madness? What do we have to do? Because I personally think there are more of our type of voters than there are of his type of voters.
I hope the hell you're right. But, what I argued during the campaign is that if you are in a close election, and we've seen it happen time after time, if you are in a close election, then having the Nazis and the Klansmen on your side, whatever their numbers are, can all too often provide the margin of victory.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what that's exactly what happened in 2016. And it's exactly how Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, who was the beneficiary of Nazi robocalls, became governor of Florida. Of course, we also now know that it turns out, oops, who could have ever imagined, the Russians accessed not one but two county databases in Florida, which means that they had the ability to flip votes.
And what's being done between then and now?
Not a goddamned thing.
There you go. There you go, Bob.
And so that's why when Ron DeClantis comes out and says, "Oh, I denounce these Nazi robocalls, and it's not fair to smear me with their brush," you can't unring a bell. And it served its purpose. And he wins. And so, in an attempt at something resembling an answer to your question, we have to start with the idea that it is not okay at all to be one of these people, under any set of circumstances, on any day, at any time, anywhere. That if you are one of these, then there must be a price to be paid for being it. You must be driven from civil society. You cannot hold a position of responsibility. You should not be able to keep a job of any support. You understand what I'm saying? You shouldn't shouldn't be able to support yourself in a job or with a job in this country. If you want to be a Nazi, you pay the price for being a Nazi, and the price for being a Nazi is that you have to live hand to fucking mouth.
Now there's an interesting concept. That would be like the shoe being on the other foot, wouldn't you think?
Well, what I want to—I mean, I don't know what the answer to this question is, Scott. Is it? I mean, most states and most jobs are governed by a doctrine of at-will employment.
Yeah.
That means you can be fired for any reason or no reason. And you can quit for any reason or no reason. It's pernicious. But as long as it's the state of the law, then we need to understand in this country that if you get caught being a Nazi, you get fired. If you get caught being a Klansman, you get fired. And frankly, yeah, we should have a national list of known Nazis and known Klansmen. Just like we've got a sex offender list. And there are people like Identify Europa who are out there trying to compile this stuff. And all I can say is if the proof is definitive, then get it out there and let the person pay the price for wanting to be a Nazi. Let the person pay. You know, my God, they weren't in Russellville, Arkansas. They weren't even marching with hoods on.
Oh, hell no.
They were who they were and proud of it.
Where was that in North Carolina some years ago? There was a big skirmish between the Nazis and the anti-Nazis, and guns were drawn on both sides. And there was eight, 12 people dead on the street. This is in North Carolina, like, I don't know, 15, 18 years ago, something like, or maybe longer ago. But they weren't wearing hoods either. I'm not even sure they were wearing uniforms. They were just like plain clothes.
So, you know, I don't know if anybody's out there trying to identify the people who marched in Russellville, Arkansas, but they damned well should be.
Well, I know one.
And wherever they live, there should be flyers to every house. This guy chanted he wanted to have, your neighbor chanted that he wanted 6 million more people to be killed. Your neighbor denies the Holocaust.
There have been a couple of frontline episodes in recent months, in the last 6 or 8 months, of a joint effort between frontline and ProPublica. And I know that ProPublica, I can't remember the journalist's name, but he actually reported this one Nazi who was causing trouble in California, who went up into Charlottesville back when all that happened and was causing trouble there. He was active duty military, Bob. And the military finally came to its senses and shit-canned him.
Oh, and by the way, James in Illinois reminds us it was Greensboro. Yes.
Yeah.
And
how long ago was that? Do you remember?
I do remember because we had somebody on the air here who lived in Greensboro who was witness to it.
Oh, geez. See, I understand the sentiment. My problem is you said a word that I'm very sensitive about, and that's list. I don't want to be on nobody's list. I barely do shopping lists, okay?
I understand that. I don't like being in anybody's databases either, but I am.
Well, yeah. But what I'm saying is that there is freedom of speech here, even if it's stupid, hateful language.
What if it's stupid, hateful language that leads to people being killed? That is not protected speech, Scott.
No, I understand that. I understand that. And I guess it's just a matter of proving it at that point. But I don't know. This is not the world I was born in, the country I was born in, Bob. I'm a child of the 60s, born in the mid-50s, you know, and have paid attention most of my life. And it's coming back to haunt me, Bob, because I don't like what I'm seeing. And sometimes I wonder what there is to be done that's going to make a transformation back to some semblance of rationality and reality. It's like an onslaught, a never-ending onslaught of madness. It's like one of those Hindu gods or an octopus or something where you can hardly fight it because of the arms, you know? And
well, here's the problem. If you let this shit grow, eventually it won't be just one stupid teacher at one stupid school in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's true.
It'll be nationwide. Because it has already happened in not just one, but more than one country. And that's the choice we face. Because they are in the ascendant. And giving freedom of speech to people whose only goal is to take yours away is no freedom at all.
I understand. I understand that. It's a, you know, you talk about puzzlers. That would be a puzzler because you, those of us who have morality and ethics and sense and have a reality-based reality, we like to give some leeway to differences. But the opposite is not true. Their marching orders are, the differences are bad, no matter what the differences are. And how do
but,
you
but
fight
you,
that?
You know, you talk, I mean, you talk about that generational change. My father's generation, the World War II generation,
yeah,
would not have batted an eyelash at the idea of going up and beating a Nazi into a... Well, if you could transport a bunch of guys fresh home from the Second World War through time and drop them, oh, say about 200 of them in Russellville, Arkansas, a couple of Sundays back.
Mm-hmm.
When they saw those Nazi flags and they heard that 6 million more bullshit, there would not have been greasy spots left of the people who were doing it.
Yeah.
Because the people who had just gotten home from fighting that vicious hate were not about to let their own country fall into it. In a way, you can blame these are the same people that were in many oftentimes leveraged into wild-eyed anti-communism. Because the one thing they wanted to be guaranteed was that their country wasn't going to be any of the bad things that they saw. All the while, of course, this country was engaged in some of the most evil shit under the sun in the form of our own version of apartheid.
Yeah.
Jim Crow. And a lot of Archie Bunker sat in their chair and bemoaned the outside agitators. But I don't know about anybody else, but if my father, who would have been 95 this year, or who would turn 95 this year, had he been alive to see what happened in Russellville, Arkansas, or had I made him aware of this story, whatever energies were left in his 95-year-old being would have been on fire.
Well, again, it's that generational memory, you know?
It's weird because, for instance, the Soviets did a far better job, because even today in Russia, they still remember the Great Patriotic War and they make a big deal out of it.
Well, how many million?
Maybe because of how many millions died.
Yeah.
Or maybe because of the protracted nature of their part of the war, because it went on a hell of a lot longer for them than it did for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other side of it is that, you know, we just wanted to get back to the business of, you know, the business of America is business. Come home, settle down, get a house in the burbs. You know, for white folks. For white folks. Anyway, I got to get out of here. We're 11 minutes over, Scott.
Yes, and I don't know about you, Bob. I'm now, you color me thoroughly depressed. I may not do any more housework tonight.
Well, that's me, Bob Kincaid, Little Ray and Sunshine.
I may go climb into bed and hide under the covers. Jeez.
No, I'm going to go and watch TV with Agnes.
Ooh. Oh, and one more TV thing. About a week or so ago, I talked about this movie that I saw called Red Sparrow.
Yes.
if any of you have seen the series that's on Amazon Prime, I think, The Americans. I remember I
It was on FX. We watched the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you liked The Americans, you will probably like this movie, Red Sparrow. Now, it's more intense in a lot of ways because it's the difference between commercial TV, even basic cable, and, you know, theatrical films. And there is nudity and there is violence and there is madness in Red Sparrow. But if you liked The Americans, this film, Red Sparrow, will likely resonate with you. And what I took from it, Bob, was, you know, it's about the premises sending specially trained people to come to this country, you know, and wreak havoc, spies, basically.
Yeah, deeply embedded, right.
Yeah, and you remember Mr. Putin and what, you know, a couple of items on his resume. And what I took from it was, if this is what we're up against, if they are that committed and that fucking crazy, and they have a, you know, an idiot in the form of Trump, that they can pull strings and cause him to say and do whatever they want him to say or do, we are totally screwed. But anyway, watch something lighthearted, Bob.
It's not exactly lighthearted, but we're going to catch the season finale to Pose. And it's proven to be a
fantastic
Pose, P-O-S-E. It's on Netflix. It's fantastic.
All right, I'll look for it.
All right. Catch you later.
All right, take care, Bob.
See ya. Bye.
See ya.
And let's see. On the way out the door, tomorrow's fundraising goal, and again, thank you, Jude, for meeting Tracy's challenge. Tomorrow's fundraising goal will be $590. So that's where we stand. And thanks to James for becoming a new subscriber over at Patreon. Thank you so much. Last word goes to Lady B. For just a moment, I entertained the thought that politically powerful Americans were sitting back and allowing all this to happen because they were going to bring down the hammer soon and punish all these crazy racist people. Like maybe they were waiting for all the evidence to emerge, waiting for all the roaches to come out of the cabinets so they could stop them all at once. But then I'm reminded of history. The government didn't work hard enough during Reconstruction. Well, I mean, they worked during Reconstruction. It's just that we abandoned Reconstruction after the South mounted a counterinsurgency. And as the years go by, every time we let a motherfucker say or post racist sentiments on the internet in the name of free speech, every time we let religious fundamentalist racists talk more about how noble the fucking Confederacy was, every time we let redneck white guys proudly wave the bars and stars on their trucks, every time a cop responds to a call from a white woman complaining that a black family is eating lunch in a park, every time we treat a school shooting as just the price we pay for freedom, every time we excuse the abhorrent behavior of one ethnicity as economic anxiety and let them buy military assault weapons for protection, even though they live in upper-class all-white suburbia, we encourage this behavior. We enable it. And it's all because of the absolute failure of many whites just to recognize that not only are they part of the problem, they are the problem. Stop blaming minorities for shit you have control of and over. Mexicans didn't ship your factories to China. The CEO of Amazon isn't Pakistani. This shit will never stop if whites aren't willing to stop rewarding other whites for doing it. And I would add, or even looking the other way. We didn't need any help from Russia to destroy this country. We're doing just fine on our own. Fuck it. I'm going to hit my vape. Stay cool, Bob. Hey, enjoy, Lady B. I am moderately envious. So that's it. A little 16 minutes extra this evening because, well, you never know when we're going to be short 16 minutes. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of our subscribers. Thanks to John for getting us started this evening. Again, thank you to James. Thank you to Tracy. Thank you to Jude. Thank you to Roberto.
Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky earlier. Thanks to Steve from Georgia Stan. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.